Hello again, this is Naziat Imam Al-Yaqub, the host for Talk Architecture Podcast and continuing episode on the concept, context, and content in Malaysian architecture identity, part two. I think that this topic warrants a second part in which I am not referring to Mitch Moss's fine post in the Facebook that I found today, but also looking at those keywords again on identity and the Malaysian context, or specific context in this regard. Now, we know all about identity, and you know, we've been thinking about identity in terms of branding. And I would think of logos like Nike, Adidas, and Coca-Cola, and Starbucks, and so on. In this day and age, you can't really, if you're into sales and marketing, you need to have a logo, a significant, recognizable logo to identify your company's product so that the familiarity of this strikes a chord. And of this sense of taste, hearing, smell, or touch, and three-dimensional, fourth-dimensional aspect of it, going through the space, would provide for a sensorial experience of that brand. Now, in terms of consumption and commercialization, you buy that. That is something that you will buy because you see the value of it. For whatever reason, you see the value of it. In terms of it satisfy you, it's an everyday object, and you're comforted by it. There is similarity between branding and identity in a sense that there is some sort of security. Maybe I'm not saying the exact word that I should say. I'm not from that, that area on branding and marketing so much. I'm just talking as a layperson. I'm just talking as someone who is involved in architecture education. Kind of interesting that a particular project come to mind. In the fourth year, we have this high-rise building project. And I remember having to teach the fourth-year architectural students the studio and the program for it. And it's kind of sort of boring because it's to do with a typical high-rise. But and it's an office, and it could be a speculative office. So you can create your own identity of the office. You may, and it has some significance, or it has a learning objective of doing something to do with sustainability, for example. That's how it evolved, this project. But I was doing it, I decided that you need to have an identity. You need to have an office which is to do with a company. At that time, I don't know why I decided on electronic goods rather than other companies. Maybe it was kind of a long time ago, possibly. But now it can be any company, really. So we have seen examples of very interesting office environment from Google and Apple and a lot of this other office design. And the Apple one is not a high rise, but it's like a circular form, right? So that could be interesting. Or when you force people to do a high rise, like 15-story or 20-story, then Why not? You don't say anything about sustainability or that it has to look like a Ken Young building. Sorry, excuse me for saying that, but it doesn't have to look like a building that has trees or foliage on it. I mean, you just can go ahead and do a branding exercise with high-rise building. So it's recognizable from far. So the CCTV building in China is very recognizable building. So is the Petronas Twin Towers and all these other buildings that play on the identity of the company that, you know, that envisioned it to represent that company. It could be a corporate office for companies, or it could be a government building. Interestingly, if you want to study about government building and identity, in Malaysia, we have the Putrajaya, different ministries of different designs. And they're all different. They're designed by different architects, yes. They somehow, some of them try to explore those forms that are to do with Muslim architecture or to do with regional ideas, identities. But that era, not many people want to deal with regurgitation of Malaysian identity from the 1980s or 90s, because it's a new era, it's a new millennium, and they were into other architecture as subjected to, say, the methods of construction or ideas of that time. With scales and fins and so on, yeah, to do with a high-rise building. I recall the Ministry of Women building. And a couple of others next to it. They were just given this three parcels of land and they had to configure out something and they're connected in the basement parking area. So it's how much you want to play the game of branding. Because for the government buildings, it's very much left to the architect and their input that was given by the minister at that time or of that particular ministry. So they were fine with it, so the architect can get away with whatever design identity that they would like the building to have. So going around here on the issue of high-rise building design that mirrors or that represent the identity of the company, which is kind of like constricted, right? If you think about architecture design project. But that was the whole idea for the fourth year project, to do a high rise. And the rest is how you know, that's the guideline given to the students. So they get to do the technical bits and then they play with a high-rise form and then they come up with the architectural identity. So is that the closest to what has been practiced outside? No, not really, because there's a lot of other complexities that go on in practice with regard to high-rise building design. But we have our case studies that students would do at that time. I forgot the name of that building. But, you know, including visiting the IBM Tower in Subanjaya by Ken Young. So let's come back to this point where we were talking about the three C's. Concept is the closest one, in my opinion, to the issue of identity. Out of the three C's, yeah, there's content and there's also context. One would say context because it's a Malaysian context, but it's too generalized. One would say this is situated in a state, just say the state of Sarawak, and one needs to have this sort of character with it and stuff like that. Maybe Iban architecture or the regional identities, yeah? So you try to find some of these patterns or motifs to incorporate into your design, for example. So when we think about this concept rather than context, I mentioned context just now, the context of Sarawak. But then this is presumptuous in a way that one adopts totally out of context of the people. So you see a building from afar, it's iconic. It sits on an island, or you can see it 360 degrees around. I mean, it's not in the middle of Kuala Lumpur. It's like more of a building that is going to stand out for many, many, many years. Like Komta in Penang, for example. So it's going to have that sort of shape, the elegance or whatever form that is going to be appreciated, you know. And it's all about form making at the end. It's all about embellishment or surface or facade design. And that is in itself is one huge aspect of high-rise design, the facade design, come to think of it. So that very much has to do with the concept more than the context. A lot of it, when you talk about identity, has to do with concept. People look into the concept of a signature building, of what to embellish on the external facade. Yeah. How do we actually create a form, for example? So when it comes to identity, we create a story about the form. We don't create a story about the function. We don't create a story about the people. These two things always get missed, the people and the function. And when we create a story about the people, it is with some sort of a futuristic outlook, obviously, because it's like a vision of what people can, what the community can be, you know, like something of the pride of the community. It's always about the building rather than people's needs and wants. So the context is always left out in the discussion. I remember now a project that was, it's not a very tall building, but in this area, it became one of the tall buildings. It had been one of the tall buildings. And it was kind of a speculative building, which has a lot of the little shops and tailors and to do with the community. It's in Petaling Jaya Old Town. So this area is kind of like not an up and coming area. It's kind of like in between. It's a transitional area. So they had this building. It was built like, I don't know, 20 years ago. Because it was so like a monolith and very not, it's not really easily adaptable. But our student of architecture at that time, I think it's Wong Joyi, decided to do a community center out of it. And at the end, he did like an exercise on using recyclable materials from the site, from that build, the original building itself, and also from the area around it where there are buildings that are being demolished. And he did a community center, and he also did some housing for people who work in that area, like dorm-like housing. And he was being very brave. In fact, I think that it was a really good attempt, and it was interesting in how he managed at the end to do all the recycling bits. But he didn't get to apply as much detailing as he would have loved, I think. So that gives you something to think about. Because here we have the hostel for the migrant workers right at the top there. The places for them to cook. And it's kind of a very open building. And the building talks about the people. And then below there we have, on the ground level, is more accessible shops and community areas for those who are elderly, because that area has a lot of elderly people. And they could do the things they love to do, special place. And then you have more for other younger people as you go up around the building. And it is building itself from the inside out. It doesn't want to be pretentious. It's just using recyclable material for the outside. If I don't use a recyclable material, I could also do a non-pretentious building, just designing from the inside out, even though I am a high-rise building that you can see from all angles from the outside. The identity that I have is inside of me, is in my soul. Is my identity is the vibrancy of the community. Because as often, as you know, a lot of people say, oh, this is not tidy, the building is, there are things hanging on it, and you don't, you know, and what about these safety issues and stuff like that? So we haven't really explored the high-rise typology in terms of a community building. There's always the office building or the housing. And it's always speculative or developer-driven rather than user-driven. There's always room for experimentation, of course, in architectural design studios for the design thesis. So Wang Zhouyi did that. And right back to the three C's, concept, context. So in this regard, the context, the people, is being celebrated in Zhouyi's design. And the content says for itself about the story of the people of Petaling Jaya, Old Town. It is very much something that he mapped out what are the wants and needs of the people in terms of community, but done as a high rise. A few others were doing buildings that are kind of tall, like the market. The wet market was given a couple of more stories, but it had urban farming in it. And then you have the library cum bus station. It's added one or two stories higher. I mean, there were experimentation on it, but it wasn't to do with identity. I think Zhouyi's project, we cannot underestimate its conversational value, and where we didn't get to those points. He was occupied with making it work, really, as circulation, and within the confines of the existing footprint or the lift core and the main structures, he had to build around it and wrapped around it. There were a lot of challenges for him. Yeah. That building should be celebrated more because it gives some sort of, you know, a design thesis project or any design that gives a lot of, shall we say, a lot of points to discuss is to me a very good design, because the fact that I can remember it in my mind very well and under this dialogue on concepts, context, and content, content and I mean, these three things are different, obviously, because they're defined differently, and the aspects of architecture just happen to be all of them starts with a C, obviously. But when we think about our role in all this as designers and architects, we find that the missing conversation could be the clue to us questioning further. And I would feel that this topic very, very important, that we looking at the Malaysian architecture identity. Again, my praise to Mitch Moss for that, giving that piece of post that make us get excited again about the Malaysian architecture identity when given these three keywords of concept, context, and content. Because if not, they'll be just dry and it'll just stop at one point. There are so many things to think about. I mean, if I was talking about high-rise buildings, I started talking about high-rise buildings from office block, and it ended with how we dealt with it differently for an architecture studio project. And then there were others. There were others in a way that there were attempts to look at the City Hall, for example. If you look at the City Hall as a high-rise building, probably 20 stories high, about that. And then there was one student, he decided to make it all be not more than 2-3 stories high. And meandering, or the site for the City Hall, is at the back alley. And it was a road, and there was some sites they could just place, literally toppling the high rise to the back alley, nearer to people. So there was also an attempt to do that with the UM campus design, with celebrating the students in the high rise faculty of philosophy, or Department of Philosophy, right up there as something which is non-existent in University of Malaya, but putting it up in the Chancellery building. And the Chancellery, or the where the Vice Chancellor office is located, at the nearer to the ground, where he would accidentally meet with students purposely, so that there is this like a public, huge public walkway that linked to the other faculties. To me, it is very interesting to do that, to symbolize what a university is in all its glory, the celebration of knowledge and celebration of the human spirit, really, to try to get more knowledge. But universities are just, like you said, ivory towers, right? At the end of the day, it's the people that can make things happen. But architecture could make things happen better with a setting, with a sensorial experience that one could have, more gardens. I mean, it would have been beautiful if a lot more of the design was explored. And identity is actually captured in the context. This is my proposal, or my proposition. Much of the questions are to be asked. The questions of identity, because you need to question identity. This is, it's such a big deal, isn't it? I identify as what? I identify as a university student. I identify as a university lecturer. I identify as a university administrator in the senior management. And one of my goals is to actually solve problems that I won't be able to if I would just sit corner of my office and think and not think about the problems that the university have. The university is the students and the lecturers, and together, not separated. So if, for example, that sort of context, the people, is prioritized, then when you have the discussion on identity, then you open it up. You open it up to what my aspiration, to my wants, my desires of how I would like the space to be. If we can just let go, architects, developers, to see the bigger picture, just to let go and not hold on to preconceivedness, precepts, that doesn't celebrate the identities in the real, truest sense. If we don't do that, wouldn't that make architecture much more enticing in terms of a vocation, a very valuable asset, rather than just icons in soulless landscapes like what it is now? Treacherous, difficult to negotiate, crossing highways, waiting, wasting time for a transportation system that doesn't work, be it with the public transportation, buses, coaches, and even in a public, in a private vehicle, build more highways, more access for vehicles, rather than celebrating the human dwelling, inspirational spaces, parks, secure. More and more people use this area, the more you feel happy. And so these are the things when we talk about architecture. Places for people. So, thank you very much again, Mitch, for opening up this conversation again. And I think you got inspired with that LDD, Four Nations event, doing the site in Kuching with people from the other ASEAN countries around. I bet you felt, you know, reinvigorated. And because you can't, when we have this sort of events where, like we used to have one last time, even Koreans and Japanese, not Japanese, Singaporeans, Filipinos, I mean, around ASEAN, we have all these gatherings. We tend to be less, shall we say, constricted. You know, we tend to let go, and the energy and the vibrancy of everything that collides, you know, that we just take off. I remember with a bunch of students, we went to Tainan, yeah, for the ACAU. We were universities that was linked to the Royal Institute of British Architects. And in this region, we had these, is it a jamboree or yearly event where we meet at different cities. And I remember our Malaysian students from University of Malaya, we went to Tainan. And we were exposed to a lot of other ideas and thoughts, and we get excited about it, and we learned a lot during these workshops. And I can imagine that what was happening in Kuching, and that is always inspirational, and we are happy that you went through that, Mitch, and that you gave us all these ideas. So thank you very much. And for those listening out there, This is the end of Concept, Context, and Content in Malaysian Architectural Identity, Part 2. Take care.